This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. I believe Tony Leo has joined us. Are you there, Tony?
I feel I am.
Thanks very much for talking to us. Tony, you've given an interview to The Maple. I see it's published today. Is that right? It's up and available?
Yes.
And
readthemaple.com. It's up today, this morning.
The Maple. And I was very glad to see that interview. And your story, your book, The Truth About the 37 Oshawa GM Strike, tells, as was brought out in the interview, it revisits the subject and highlights information that had not been previously known or appreciated. And one of the things I was struck by in the interview was the parallel you might notice between this individual, Mitch Hepburn, the conservative in Ontario, who wanted to fight, literally, with what became the United Auto Workers in Oshawa, and Doug Ford. I mean, it is a kind of, he seemed to have gone almost broke ranks, you might say, amongst the wealthy, powerful people. He wanted more trouble than did the liberal government of the time, which I guess might be a parallel for now.
Yeah, I think that's very true. Just one minor correction. Mitch Hepburn was also a liberal, but he was in a big feud with the liberal prime minister of the country at the time. And there are parallels with Doug Ford, because he was a bombastic and guy who was looking to make trouble, and looking for things that would inflame people. And so Hepburn was talking about this fantasy he had of thousands of communists invading Oshawa to make trouble, and he portrayed it that way to try to stir up trouble, and he did everything he could to prevent a resolution of the strike. He was the real main obstacle that workers had to take on. So they really had a lot of challenges. Even though it was a relatively short strike, they were dealing with this premier who was formed a private militia, basically, to try to stir up trouble. And he had the media supporting this portrayal of the strike as almost a revolution, and they had a lot of he was really more of the problem than even General Motors Corporation. So they really had to.
Eventually, the ruling class had to rule him.
Well, yes. Hepburn, as it came out during the strike, was closely tied in with owners of mining companies in northern Ontario, and he'd even been induced to buy stock, so he had investments, and he was very concerned about unionism spreading beyond Oshawa to the mining communities in Ontario, which he felt would damage the wealth of the owners of those companies and his own investments.
Yeah.
And so he was trying to stop it before it got started. And so there was a very clear ruling class interest in trying to prevent industrial unionism, which is the CIO, which is what the UAW strike in Oshawa represented. They wanted to stop that from even getting a toehold in Canada.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking to Tony Leo. He's the author of The Truth About the 37 Oshawa GM Strike. There's a book launch in 779 Bathurst Street. Am I right? A different book list. Different book list. It's 7 p.m. this coming Wednesday, the 30th of October. There's an element to this that strikes me as well. Actually, well, to go on this point, what was feared by Mitch Hepburn actually happened, right? Well, his fears were realized. The miners did become organized.
Yes, not right away, but within a few years. And
it was the same, by the way, it was the same contestants, right?
Well, yes, it was CIO unions.
And the CIO was considered redder than the Reds, according to him.
According to Mitch Hepburn, you know, they were revolutionaries, you know, about to set up Soviets, I think. but, yeah, the steel industry, the mining industry, over the next few years, was organized by CIO unions. So Mitch Hepburn failed in his attempt because of the for a number of reasons. And I think it's really instructive to look back at this period because we do need to understand what led to their success in the face of this incredible opposition from both corporations, but also the government and the media. And it really comes down to this CIO idea of organizing workers on a class basis. And that was a left-wing idea. There's no doubt about it. And yeah, that's why they were successful.
And as you point out in the interview with the Maple, the people doing who believed in this were socialists, communists, and progressives of various stripes.
Exactly.
And they believed in workers, and they actually believed in a socialist system, which was part of their inspiration and motivation.
Yes. Yeah. And
NDP used to believe in socialism until Bob Rae said, no, let's quit.
They had to take that word out of the their constitution at some point, or felt they had to, unfortunately. But yes, I know that's true. And if you... You know, I talk about in the book the all of the misrepresentation that I attribute to Irving Abella and his account of the strike, which has been accepted without question mostly for the last 50 years. And he didn't talk about that at all. He didn't acknowledge at all that the people who were doing the organizing had been there on the ground organizing for at least since 1928, when there was a failed strike, and organizing on a class basis. They were organizing in the communities. They were organizing ethnic organizations. They believed in organizing women. They organized the unemployed. So it was on a class basis, and they had built this movement that by 1937 was in a position to really take on GM and win the strike. And with under the auspices of the UAW, which had just carried out the amazing Flint sit-down strike and beating GM in the United States.
Mm-hmm. You know, by the way, people, of course, 37 is, you got to mark it in your calendar, 37. But it took 28, 29, 30, 31, 32 of socialist radicals and others who were steadily working at it, and then all of a sudden a tree falls, right?
That's right. That's a good analogy. They had, in the words of one historian, Manley, he said they built the foundation, and without the foundation it would not have been successful. But during that period of time, they were jailed, they were fired, they were beaten up, they had to organize secretly. They had newspapers that were distributed in Oshawa and other auto plants. So there was this whole long history of organizing and developing workers with great courage and resourcefulness, and with an ideological belief or understanding of how capitalism worked that was able to guide the work they were doing and allow them to avoid the pitfalls.
Yeah. It's a great story, great book, and it's Tony Lea. The title is The Truth About the 37 Oshawa GM Strike, Wednesday night, October 30, at the different book list. There will be a launch, and I hope everybody will attend. Tony, thank you very, very much. We do appreciate it.
Thanks, Phil.
Okay. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT. just on Tony's picking up on a point from Tony about class consciousness, which is essential to do any organizing successfully. So class consciousness is in existence at all times, sometimes good and sometimes bad. I had a good friend, Jack Smaller, who organized for the mine mill smelter workers, and he told me a story. He was telling me about how they organized in Kirkland Lake. And I said, oh boy, Kirkland Lake, I've heard a lot about the miners there. I said, they must have been very class conscious. And Jack said, oh, very. He said, they always took their hats off when the foreman came by. So that was before they became union. That was a negative expression of class consciousness turned into a positive. This is the Taylor Report. I think we're just about look at the Pedro is the expert. I remind you of the two books we talked about today, Family Ties, Peter McFarlane, Lorimer, Get the Book, and The Truth About the 37 Oshawa GM Strike, Tony Leah, Baraka Books, and it's going to be, and the book launch will be 7 o'clock Wednesday, October 30, at a different book list. Pedro, thanks very much. This is Taylor Report. See you next week.